Now let's review the differential diagnosis of headache. There are 9 potentially serious causes of headache that should be considered. 1. Subdural hematoma. 2. Meningitis. 3. Subarachnoid hemorrhage. 4. Hypertension. 5. Glaucoma. 6. Mastoiditis. 7. Uremia. 8. Carbon monoxide poisoning. And 9. Temporal arteritis. Other poisonings, as well as cerebral tumors, can also cause headache, but the headache in these cases is usually not the predominant complaint. A subdural hematoma should always be considered in the substance abuse patient, particularly the alcoholic. Children who are victims of abuse and hemophiliacs are also candidates for intracranial bleeding. Important clues are these: a history of trauma, a behavioral change, an altered level of consciousness, aphasia, vomiting, convulsions, and unilateral weakness. In the young male child, be sure to ask the parent if there is a history of hemophilia. On physical exam, look for evidence of head injury and take note of the pulse. Patients with an expanding intracranial hematoma are often bradycardic. If a plain CT scan of the head appears normal, but you still suspect a subdural, then order a contrast-enhanced CT or an MRI. Meningitis classically presents with headache, neck pain, fever, and vomiting. Very young and very old patients frequently do not have this classic presentation. In this latter group of patients, always consider the diagnosis of meningitis when the clinical presentation is unfocused, that is, signs and symptoms are vague or generalized. Almost all patients with meningitis appear acutely ill, often in disproportion to physical findings, which may be sparse or even absent. The patient may be confused, irrational, or excited. Positive findings on physical exam are fever, nuchal rigidity, Koenig's and Brudzinski signs. Absence of these findings does not rule out the diagnosis. CT scan of the head should be done first to rule out a mass lesion in patients who are obtunded or unconscious and those who have focal neurologic signs, papilledema or seizures, as well as those with a history of AIDS or risk factors for HIV. If the CT is negative, then lumbar puncture is clearly indicated, as it is the definitive diagnostic study. Countercurrent immunoelectrophoresis or latex agglutination may help identify the causative organism. These tests are especially useful in cases of partially treated meningitis. Antibiotic therapy should be initiated without delay, especially in patients with acute presentations. Currently, third-generation cephalosporins, such as ceftriaxone and cefotaxime, are preferred by many for initial therapy of meningitis, particularly if therapy is initiated empirically. These agents have good CSF penetration and are effective against strep pneumoniae, Neisseria meningitidis, Haemophilus influenza, and most gram-negative enteric organisms. They do not, however, cover Listeria or methicillin-resistant staph. Empirical therapy, if instituted early, that is, within 30 to 60 minutes of presentation, significantly reduces the morbidity and sequelae associated with acute meningitis. The following regimens are appropriate. For neonates, that is, those less than 1 month of age, ampicillin and cefotaxime are commonly used. An alternative regimen is ampicillin and gentamicin. Infants, that is, those between 1 and 3 months of age, can be given ampicillin and cefotaxime or ampicillin and ceftriaxone. Children older than 2 months should be given cefotaxime or ceftriaxone along with vancomycin. Adults 18 to 50 years old should receive ceftriaxone along with vancomycin, and adults older than 50 should be given ceftriaxone and ampicillin. A good oral board topic would be meningitis due to the West Nile virus, which should always be considered as a possibility in patients with fever, headache, vomiting, mental status change, and stiff neck. Additional findings of proximal muscle weakness or flaccid paralysis should heighten your suspicion. CSF findings reveal lymphocytes, an elevated protein, and absence of bacteria. Empiric treatment for bacterial meningitis and/or herpes simplex encephalitis is appropriate until results of testing for the West Nile virus have been clarified in serum and CSF studies. The headache associated with spontaneous subarachnoid hemorrhage is sudden in onset and frequently severe, sometimes described by the patient as the worst headache I've ever had, but more often described as different from any he or she has ever had. Most often, spontaneous subarachnoid hemorrhages are due to rupture of an intracranial aneurysm, referred to as a Berry aneurysm. Patients with these bleeds usually look sick, and nausea and vomiting are prominent associated symptoms. If the patient has only a small warning bleed, referred to as a sentinel bleed, his presentation may be more subacute. This is also true of patients whose aneurysms are expanding but have not yet leaked. These patients sometimes present with a headache that has been present for several days and is different from any headache they have had before. The headache of subarachnoid hemorrhage is also sometimes associated with a painful eye. An examination may reveal ptosis on that side. Patients with a history of migraine can have this clinical picture as well, but their headache is usually gradual in onset rather than the abrupt, sudden onset characteristic of a subarachnoid hemorrhage. I think it's important to note here that patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage have been misdiagnosed as migraine headache. You should be suspicious if a known migraine patient tells you that this headache is different from the others. Be sure to perform a complete neurologic exam on your migraine patients. Physical findings associated with a subarachnoid hemorrhage include drowsiness or coma, hypertension, nuchal rigidity, positive Koenig's and Brudzinski signs, bilateral Babinski's, and cranial nerve palsy, especially the third cranial nerve. Definitive diagnosis is usually made by CT scan. However, some patients with a subarachnoid hemorrhage have a negative scan. In these cases, an LP needs to be done to establish the diagnosis. Uncontrolled hypertension is a common cause of headache in patients with a history of hypertension, heart disease, and kidney disease. Keep in mind, however, that uncontrolled hypertension may be associated with intracranial bleeding, so a CT scan should be considered before attributing the headache to hypertension alone. A history of recurring headaches should make the clinician suspicious of this diagnosis. In addition to a high blood pressure recording, a characteristic finding is retinal changes. Signs of ventricular hypertrophy on physical exam support this diagnosis. These include a deep S wave in V1 and a tall R wave in V5. Patients with glaucoma usually present with eye pain, but not always. Headache alone may be the single presenting complaint. Other associated symptoms are blurred vision and vomiting. Physical exam reveals a tense, red eye, steamy cornea, and a dilated pupil. Tonometry should be performed in these patients. Elevated intraocular pressure establishes the diagnosis. Immediate treatment is required. If the patient is not vomiting, have him drink glycerol 50% over ice in a dose of 1 to 2 cc's per kilogram. If he is vomiting, start an IV and administer acetazolamide 500 milligrams, followed by 20% mannitol 500 cc's or 1 to 2 grams per kilogram over 1 hour. A 2% solution of pilocarpine should be instilled into the eye every 15 minutes. A topical beta-adrenergic agent should also be given. Timolol, 1 drop, repeated in 10 minutes, decreases the secretion of aqueous humor by the ciliary body. Immediate consultation with an ophthalmologist is required. Patients who present with a headache and a history of persistent ear drainage should be evaluated for mastoiditis. On physical exam, there is a purulent aural drainage with a small perforation of the tympanic membrane. There is tenderness over the mastoid, and you'll also notice a thickening of the skin over the area of the mastoid. The diagnosis should be confirmed with mastoid x-rays or a CT if available. An ENT specialist should be called for immediate consultation. Patients with uremia can also present with headache. Other associated symptoms should be sought. These include fatigue, decreased mental sharpness, laziness, muscle cramping and twitching, nausea and vomiting, anorexia, an unpleasant taste in the mouth, and itching. On physical exam, the patient may be hypertensive and exhibit a yellowish-brown skin discoloration and/or a uremic frost. Lab findings consistent with the diagnosis of uremia are the following: an elevated BUN and creatinine, hyponatremia, hypocalcemia, hyperkalemia, hyperphosphatemia, a mild acidosis with the CO2 usually in the range of 10 to 15, and a urine-specific gravity that is around 1.010. Headache is the initial symptom of carbon monoxide poisoning and generally occurs with a carboxyhemoglobin level of 20%. The headache is described as throbbing. As the carboxyhemoglobin level increases to 30%, patients may also complain of dizziness, nausea, vomiting, confusion, and irritability. At the onset of cold weather, when furnaces and fireplaces are being used for the first time, people often present in clusters from the same house or apartment building. Suspect carbon monoxide poisoning and draw a carboxyhemoglobin level whenever there is a history of exposure to exhaust fumes, smoke, methylene chloride, or poorly ventilated heaters. Therapy for carbon monoxide poisoning should be based primarily on the patient's clinical condition, as carboxyhemoglobin levels may be deceptively low despite significant poisoning. Any patient with known or suspected CO poisoning should receive 100% oxygen therapy. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy produces a more rapid resolution of the acute effects of CO poisoning, but is both expensive and relatively unavailable. Given these restrictions, hyperbaric oxygen therapy is generally reserved for patients with coma or a history of coma, a carboxyhemoglobin level greater than 25% at any time, severe metabolic acidosis, that is, a pH less than 7.2, symptoms persisting after 4 hours of 100% oxygen therapy, seizure activity, an altered mental status, neonates, and pregnant patients who are symptomatic or have a carboxyhemoglobin level greater than 10%. In addition, patients with cardiovascular instability manifested by ischemia, infarction, or dysrhythmias, as well as those with associated thermal, inhalation, or chest wall injuries, are also candidates for hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Arrangements should be made to transfer these patients to the nearest facility with a hyperbaric chamber. The headache of temporal arteritis may be confused with that of migraine because the patient is usually female and the headache is severe and frequently unilateral. At times, there is a low-grade fever and diminished vision on the affected side, but these signs are frequently absent. The classic finding on physical exam is tenderness over the site of the inflamed artery. Temporal arteritis is one of the few headaches whose diagnosis is aided by a laboratory test. The SED rate is always substantially elevated. The suspicion of temporal arteritis constitutes a medical emergency because failure to diagnose and treat it may result in permanent neurologic loss. Visual impairment is the most common sequelae of temporal arteritis, but basilar and cerebellar infarcts have also occurred. High-dose steroids are indicated as soon as the diagnosis is suspected. Oral prednisone, 60 to 80 milligrams per day, or IV methylprednisolone, 250 milligrams every 6 hours. For severe pain, narcotic analgesia may be required. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents can be used in other patients. If the patient has an impending vascular complication or is unable to care for herself, she should be admitted. Those with less severe symptoms who are able to care for themselves and have an identified physician may be discharged if close follow-up can be arranged for them.